All right, dude. We're back.
Woo!
Yes.
That was fucking gay.
So it's all right.
I'm going to get canceled one day.
I love the enthusiasm.
But not today.
You'll only get canceled if you get famous, dog.
Yeah, that ain't happening. Dude, we're on 14. This is episode 14. I don't think I've ever committed this long to anything besides, like...
being sober?
Yeah. 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 And my wife, you know.
Yeah.
But, we got Shane here today. Thank you, Shane, for doing this.
Glad to be here, man.
We probably will get into some heavy stuff.
Love it.
But, we'll keep it light and fun at the beginning, okay?
I love it. Yeah. Either way. I'm excited about it.
It'd be like a rom-com, you know? Yeah. Nice romantic comedy in the beginning and then just...
the juicy stuff.
Drama at the end.
Yeah, it gets really sad and then there's a happy ending.
We'll laugh, we'll cry.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. I've had a couple people cry listening to the podcast. They like hit me up and they're like, dude, I cried listening to that episode. And I'm like, yeah, it was rough. Like, that's my response, you know?
Yeah, there's some rough ones in there too. That's for sure.
I think that's why it's such a... like a good idea, you know, like a quality idea, because the demographic that you're choosing as your show
audience,
as your your audience and the people that are doing, that are like starring in the podcast, you know what I'm saying? They have compelling stories. Like that's one thing, that's one common denominator with people who suffer from addiction, is that they have really compelling stories. Like they, and they're relatable. You know,
They're relatable, like, to like a level like most people can relate to, not just drug addicts.
Well, and I think that's what's important too, is to show that like everybody's got like a compelling story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you want to, if you want to share it. So,
yeah. And maybe somebody cracked out who used to be a hooker will listen and be like, oh, maybe I should get my life together.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
There's people that like...
That's me. I did that.
Addiction is a broad spectrum too. There's people with gambling addictions, sex addictions.
All sorts of stuff.
Overeaters, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They just need to break some kind of cycle of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Like adjust their behavioral pattern.
Yeah, and I might get shunned for this, but AA isn't the only like tools people can use to recover from their sickness, you know?
No. Yeah, and I mean, AA even says that. So.
Oh, does it? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then, fuck y'all. I need to read the book again. So, I wanted to ask you on here, Shane, because I know, I can't relate to it personally, but I know, like, you've struggled with, like, I don't know what's the right way to put it. Like some real, real heavy, like mental problems.
Yeah.
I don't want to come off aggressive
You're not, man. I think it is very cathartic to talk about it. You know, I found, and that's one of the ways that I battle. So for those listening, I struggled with hearing voices for about 3 years. Hearing voices all day, every day. I could hear it over music. And it began as something where they were kind to me. Like, and it was always in the third person. They were very, like, they would talk directly to me. But for the most part, it was like the context I describe it as when I'm talking to like a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist, is it sounds like there's a room full of people and they're watching like the goings on of my life on a monitor of some sort.
Mm.
And they're just commenting on everything that I'm doing, like interactions that I have with people, thoughts that I have, like, and it became so debilitating because I had, like, at first I was afraid to talk about it and I didn't want anybody to know that I was hearing voices. So while I'm like, I'm dealing with these, I'm living a double life pretty much. Like,
right.
I'm hearing these voices and I'm talking to them regularly. But while I'm like conversing, like say I was conversing with you, I'd be pretending that I wasn't. So I was, you know, I was like separate. So it was a very difficult, debilitating situation.
I can't imagine doing
it. Yeah. So you're basically saying that it was like the Truman Show. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah,
exactly. It was like that. Do you remember like the first instance of when it happened? Is that clear to you, or do you know?
So I think the first time, granted, I was doing a lot of drugs when I first started, meth and heroin together.
Hell yeah.
I'm sure that didn't help.
Right.
And I was like in this little RV that was on my mom's property, my mom's husband's property. And I was just sitting back there and they're like, he is so unbelievable. I just kept hearing, he is so unbelievable. And I'm like, who the hell is saying that? And I went through this whole, like, 3-4 month investigational episode where I was, like, trying to find the source of the voices.
Right.
Like, at first. Like, right. I was like, what the hell is this coming from?
Yeah, and you're on the, like, paranoia of on drugs, too, you know what I mean? So
get this. This is a crazy story about that, okay?
So, sweet. So, this is what I want.
So, and this is way out there, okay? But mind you, I was in a state of psychosis, like, basically. And so what would trip me out is it would manifest in the physical realm sometimes, like, not just hearing voices, like crazy shit would happen during like just everyday life that would relate to the voices, or they would be one and the same. Like it was manifesting in the physical realm. So like I still believe it was real, you know, like I still have a hard time detaching myself from that. No matter how much therapy or medication that I take, which I'm doing both, but, I can't help but feel like it was a real experience, of the spiritual nature. But so I was asking them questions and I'm like, you know, like, why is this happening to me? What is going on? And like, they tried to tell me at first that aliens were involved. And I was like, okay, like expand on that. Like,
this is a conversation you're having with the voices. Okay.
Yeah, this is a conversation I'm having with the voices. And they're like, when you were 5 years old, you were abducted by aliens and your father was involved. Now, mind you, before this point, I had never met my father, but one time when I was 5 years old, I met him once when I was 5 years old, and he took me to his house for my 5th birthday. I remember it, like, I remember everything from this day, because it was the first time I was meeting my dad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I remember he bought me this little Power Rangers watch that doubled as, like, a game, like, it had little silver balls in it, and you rolled them around and try and get them in the holes.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys ever...
I used to have a watch like that, yeah.
So it was this little red Power Rangers watch, dude. I remember going out to his house, and I remember what it looked like, everything about the place, everything down to, like, decorations that he had on his walls.
Right.
You know, he had, he considered himself a little bit of an astronomer, because he had a really high-powered telescope, and he would take pictures of the stars, so he had pictures of nebulas, and really high-resolution pictures of the moon, and stuff like that. Like, he had all these decorations in his house, and I remember going there, and I remember the house, but I don't remember waking up after going to sleep. I remember going to bed. I remember, like, the color of the room. You know, he had this weird green light. Like, it was just I remember everything except for I don't remember going to sleep, and I don't remember how I got home. I don't remember waking up, how I got back to my mother's house. And so, I asked my mom about it the next day, or after I had this conversation with the voices.
Right.
When they told me this, I'm like, Mom, how did I get home the day that I went with my dad, when I was 5 years old? How did I get home the next day? Like, what happened? She's like, I don't know. She's like, I was working at Pat's Place, which was a restaurant in Sholo. I was born in Sholo. And she was working at Pat's Place, and she said that her coworkers just found me in the parking lot. Somebody had dropped me off in the parking lot and just left me there. That was her story of how I got home. And I have no recollection of it at all. So I'm like, what the hell? So I think, okay, I want to look up my dad, and I want to get some answers for this.
Right, because yeah.
I wanted some answers. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
So I contact my Aunt Jerry on Facebook, and she had the same last name as my dad, and she happened to live in Snowflake, which is the last place that my dad was thought to be living. And he, so long story short, I got a hold of my dad through her on Facebook. She gave me his phone number and I called him and I'm like, hey, this is your son, Shane. He's like, hey, how are you? Like, I'm so glad to be hearing from you. And I was like after a little bit of small talk, I was like, hey, I just have some questions that I really need some answers. I'm going through a lot right now, and I really just need to ask you something about the time that I met you when I was 5. And I was like, all I need to know is how I got home. I was like, I don't remember anything that of that night, and I don't remember the next day. I need to know how I got home that day. And he's like, your mom picked you up. So they're giving me two completely conflicting stories. My mom didn't own a car at the time. My mom has always been a severe drug addict, alcoholic. Like, she's owned maybe one car my entire childhood, and that was when, before I could, like, process memory.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they're both giving me these two conflicting stories about how I got home that day, and I remember everything up until that point. So fast forward to these voices, they're telling me, like, when you were 5 years old, you were abducted by aliens, and the voices were, your father was involved somehow. And, like, it just trips me out that I have this, like, blank of, and I don't remember, like, the next 2 years after that. Like, I had, like, a blank in my memory for up until I was, like, 6.5, 7 years old. So something happened, according to the voices. But the voices were not reliable. Like,
right.
They're not, they like to deceive me and make me think shit. So I still don't believe, that happened, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the time, you were probably thinking,
at the time, I was like, what in the fuck?
Right, like, maybe I was abducted by aliens.
I was, and I just don't fucking have any
right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, for the record, I don't believe that. The voices told me a lot of shit. They tried to tell me celebrities were involved, and they tried to fuck with me so much, dude.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what it... I've taken lots and lots of drugs, as everybody knows, and I, like, remember huffing, like, air duster. There was, like, a period of time where, like, I would just steal air duster and just, like, and I would black out. And when I black out, I would have crazy-ass fucking trips, like, that, like, demons were chasing me and that, like, my hand was, like, melting away, like, from, like, the flesh to the bone. But I was asleep the whole time. But they felt real, you know what I mean? And I honestly... thought I was going insane there for a little bit. So, and I feel like in that aspect, I can like empathize a little, right? So,
yeah, and that's see, and the scariest part about it is like I'm a product of adversity. I've lived a very adverse life from the time I was a kid, you know what I'm saying? Like, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but like, I've dealt with difficulty my entire life, and my mind was kind of sacred to me because it was what got me through all that shit.
Right. It was like the last refuge that you had. It was
my sanctuary.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So once I felt that was slipping out of my control, like once I no longer had control of my thoughts and I was losing it, it was a crippling blow to my soul.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, fuck. I'm going insane.
And you have nothing left, right?
Yeah. So. And I was, you know, on drugs, completely just lost. But I always had my mind to fall back on, like that helped me solve problems and things like that.
Do you think maybe that like the fact like you had never met your father and then like you go and see him and then maybe like going back home like without him in your life was like a traumatic event and you just kind of like blocked it out?
I don't know. Like, I've talked to my brother about that. My brother's a psychologist. He's a clinical psychologist, and I was like talking to him regularly when I was hearing the voices and trying to explain to him like this is real, like something's going on, and I took a psyche eval. I took a full psyche eval to determine if I was schizophrenic or bipolar or there was some underlying
like conditions, psychological issue, yeah.
Condition, and they're like, no, you're not schizophrenic, you're not bipolar. All you have is anxiety and depression. And
I mean, that's gotta be kind of like like even like scarier, right? Because like if you were like bipolar or schizophrenic, then you have like an explanation for it, right? And a reason. You're like, oh, this is why I am the way I am, and it's somewhat treatable to an extent. And then they're basically saying like, no, there's like you don't, and that's fucked, dude.
Yeah, I had multiple therapists and everybody telling me you're not schizophrenic. And I was trying to tell them, like, and I didn't want to get, like, locked up in a padded room.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
And so I made sure to, like, exude some level of stability and sanity. You know what I'm saying? I could maintain. I could cope with
right.
it. And, like, I was just telling them, well, something is going on with me. Like, something is happening to me right now, and I don't understand what it is.
Right.
And so it was terrifying. It was the scariest 3 years of my life. It was torture. It changed me forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't hear voices. I don't hear voices today. I don't hear voices anymore. But there's some like residual like PTSD.
For sure.
Absolutely. Yes.
It was nonstop.
100%. I'd be even more amazed if you didn't feel some like after effects of that. You know what I mean? That's like 3 years is a long fucking time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It felt like forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like living in hell. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not
exactly.
It's not fun.
I can't even imagine how rough that was, dude. What was there any like moments where what's the right way to say this?
Just say it.
Was there any like moments where you thought like they might win? Like
one of my overdoses from the last couple years was like a straight suicide attempt. Like that's what I winged off fentanyl on purpose. Like I someone told me they had the fentanyl pills, the little blue perp 30s or whatever they look like. And I was like, I'm going to get that, and I'm going to do a fat shot, and I'm going to end it, because I cannot handle this anymore. Mm. I lost a job. I was working at Safeway in the deli, and the voices were so loud, they were over my headphones. I would put music in, and I could still hear them, like, in between pauses in the song. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could just not escape it, and it was so hard to, like, just play the double life role, like, be pretending like everything's okay. And
yeah.
And just hearing these voices that are telling me to kill myself, telling me that I'm a piece of shit. They would call me a piece of shit all day long. They would like just berate me and just like insult me all day long, and like it's attacking my self-esteem. Like these voices are telling me I'm a horrible person and judging me for thoughts that I would have and things that I had done when I was a kid that I was ashamed of. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I started, but, I wanted to stay alive, but I was so exhausted, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't want to hurt anybody like that, but I was just so exhausted, and I didn't think there would ever be a way out. I had been told I wasn't schizophrenic. I had no foreseeable end to this experience,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a terrifying, I was being tortured, basically.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was ever going to end, and that was the worst part about it. If there was some kind of light at the end of the tunnel, if I was like, okay, I just got to get to X point, and all this is going to be, it's going to be over with. I'm going to be able to, you know, get through this. But I had no idea, no way of knowing if it was ever going to end. So that's why, like, I was pushed to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm done. I tap out.
I think anybody would probably feel that way, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So you said at first that they didn't start out, like, so aggressive or, like...
No, yeah. At first they started out, like they were intrigued by me. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I would have an interaction with somebody, and they'd be like, he is so unbelievable. Like... And they would tell me, like, you have succeeded in blowing the minds of every single one of us, Shane. And I'm like, thank you. Like, it's very nice of you. Like, just by kind of, like, basic conversation.
Yeah.
Like, treating people nicely. You know what I mean? Like, they were just like, he, like... And it wasn't until, like, a year and a half into it where I started having intrusive thoughts. And so I was really averse to medication. I was against taking medication for these voices because I didn't want to be like a zombie. I didn't want to have like the parts of my personality taken away from me that I've seen other people who takes antipsychotic medication. Like, it kind of pulls from your character. You know what I'm saying? It makes you less than your original self. And I was really scared of that. So I was averse to medication at first. I was like, I'm not going to take meds. But then one day, dude, like, it was like at the drop of a penny, I had these intrusive thoughts start, dude. Like, because I would converse with these things inwardly. Like, I would say something with that inner voice, you know, like without saying it out loud, and they would respond to it. And these were real time conversations that I was having with these voices, right? Like, I would say something inwardly, like, I would ask their name, and they, like, the reason it felt so real is because I was having real-time conversations with responses that I didn't have time to generate a hallucinogenic response, right? So, like, I would ask something, I would say, okay, what's your name? And this voice, one of the most prominent voices was a female voice, and she was like, Cynthia. Before I could even think of a name to hallucinate or replace that with, she said Cynthia. And I don't know anybody named Cynthia. There's no reason that name would have come to mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I was like, what the fuck? Cynthia? And I was like, okay, what's your favorite food, Cynthia? She's like, French toast. Again, totally random. Like, there's nothing...
Yeah, without skipping a beat,
I didn't have time to think of something to answer myself with, right? Like, it was just real-time conversations. So... And then, like, it occurred to me one day, I was like, damn, these voices have access to my thoughts. And then almost, like, at, like, the flick of a switch, I started thinking the most horrid things. Things about murder, rape of, like, babies. You know what I'm saying? Like, things that were not me. Like, again, like, separate from me. Stuff I would never even consider doing. Murder, vile, just disgusting, vulgar things. Yeah. And I couldn't control it. Like, I had to, like... combat these thoughts all day. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm willing to take medication. And that's when I like surrendered and I was like, look, I'll take medication. I can't handle this too. On top of the hearing voices, I can't handle not being able to control my thoughts.
Yeah. Like, well, and
you know,
at like some point you gotta like, I don't know. Like if I was having thoughts like that, you know, I think like the medication would probably be the better solution there, you know.
I'd rather be a zombie than think horrible thoughts like that all day.
Yeah,
and I was just apologizing for thoughts. I spent most of my day like apologizing to God, like, God, forgive me for that thought, that wasn't me. And like, I was trusting that the God of my understanding knew that I didn't want to be thinking those thoughts, and He wasn't going to judge me for them,
right?
You know, He wasn't going to punish me for something I couldn't control. And I would just say a little prayer after I had a thought like that. And what it's crazy. So the way I began to combat the voices, because I'm a member of this Facebook group. It's like Intervoice. It's like a group of people all around the world who are hearing voices. And I like to share my story on there because something worked, right? Like, I'm no longer hearing voices anymore.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think it is a combination of God, like, genuine compassion towards the voices, and telling on myself. It was, like, the recipe for... Because what I did is I started talking about the things, the thoughts that I would have. I would tell my therapist, or I would tell my sponsor, I would call David Harris. Harris?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know David Harris as well. Yeah. So I would call David and be like, dude, I just had this thought. It's fucking dark, it's disgusting, I'm sorry for it, but I want to tell you about it. And I would tell on myself. And then I began telling on myself for every shameful act I've ever done. Like... from stealing to sexually related, everything that I judge myself for, or I think somebody else would judge me for, I began telling on myself. So then it took fuel away from the voices.
Right.
Like, they didn't know what to, they couldn't.
There's no ammo, right? Like, you already snitched on yourself. Exactly. So they, and people know, so they, there's no, I guess there's no shame behind it, right?
Yeah,
like, you've already given it up. Exactly. And that's super cool.
And like that, so that's one thing I always tell the people on that voices page on Facebook. I'm just like, look, whatever you're ashamed of, tell on yourself for. If your voices are like ridiculing you and judging you for things, go find someone you trust and tell them everything. Like, whether it's intrusive thoughts, like I had, because a lot of people struggle with the intrusive thought thing, thinking thoughts they can't control.
Yeah.
And I was like, just tell on yourself for that. Tell on yourself, and like, get it out loud because you're taking ammunition, like you said, John, you're taking ammunition away from the Bushes. They don't have anything to use against you.
Right.
Like, what are you going to do? You're going to make fun of me for something I would openly tell somebody else? So, and then I started, like, taking on a genuine attitude of compassion towards the Bushes, right? Like, I started feeling genuinely sorry for them.
Hmm.
Because in my mind, it was, like, real personalities that were fucking with me. People with feelings and thoughts of their own, right? And I have this, like, a little bit of a philosophy. It's like, to cause suffering is to suffer yourself, right? Like, they're putting me, countless others through... These voices are putting me and countless others through this torturous experience, and they have to be suffering spiritually themselves to even be able to bring themselves to do that, right?
Yeah.
So then I started just saying, like, I feel sorry for you. Like, I have compassion for you, and I'm sorry that you're suffering so much. And the last thing something that wants you to suffer wants to hear is that you have pity towards it, right? That you have compassion. They don't want to hear that shit.
So you, like, mind fucked them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're so a fucking Jedi, dude.
I was just like, I'm sorry that you're suffering, and I'm sorry that you feel the need to put me through this, you know? And they started easing up. And then, so I'm not here to preach. I'm not here to, like, express my beliefs or anything like that. But once I made the decision to get baptized, it's like, stopped. Like, they gave up. They got tired. They gave up.
Really?
Yeah. They stopped entirely.
And that happened when you were, and I know a little bit of your story, that happened when you were in the guidance center, right?
Yeah.
Like, you were, like, detoxing from, like, a relapse that you had, right?
Yeah.
And so you basically had a burning bush moment, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like,
I was like,
fuck it, God, take me as I am, and then gone.
So I got out, hit up Kevin McCoy. I was like, dude, I'm interested in learning about God. I don't know anything about it. Like, I'm interested. He's like, come to my Bible study. So I went, and then...
I didn't know he did a Bible study.
Yeah, Kevin, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Do you think that maybe in that moment you finally, like, just gave up your will to something better, and that's what caused it?
I think so. I think so.
Like the final surrender, kind of?
Just,
you know?
Yeah, finally, like, I can't do this on my own, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. You think, like, I didn't start praying until, like, a year and a half into the Voices experience. That's how, like, dependent on self I was.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was going through this shit, and I didn't start depending on God until it was like a foxhole prayer. I was like, please just help me, and I'll get sober, or I'll never be
Yeah. Just one more time, God.
Yeah, just like, man, help me. And like, it wasn't until I started believing what I was reading about God and in the big book, you know, in the book, and believing it, and believing that there is something more powerful than myself, and that more than there existing something that is more powerful than me, that thing that exists, or that person, or that who that exists, wants a relationship with me, and they want to see me do well, right? They want to see me succeed.
Yeah.
And so I started just participating in my relationship with God, and I haven't heard voices for almost a year now, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It is.
I have a question about the Facebook group. What was it like when you, like, learned that there were other people, right? Because I'm sure, like, you were always wondering, you know what I mean? Like, I can't be the only one. Like, other people have to be going through this. Or if I'm the only one, like, I'm so fucked, right? You know what I mean? I bet when you found, how was it finding other people that were sharing that similar experience?
There was a strong sense of, like, camaraderie.
Yeah.
Like, in empathy, you know, like, I've talked to one lady, dude, who's been hearing them since 2012.
Oh, my God.
And she hit me up because I post on the Facebook page, like, hey, I'm not hearing voices. If you ever want to talk, contact me and we can share our experiences with each other, right? And she has been hearing them since 2012, and she hit me up, and she's like, hey, how did you get them to stop? Like, what have you done to get them stuff? And I just tell everybody the same thing that I just told you guys, those three things that I did, God. And so here's another really quick, crazy experience that I just had like a week ago with this woman, all right? This woman from the Facebook page, we start sharing our experiences with our voices. Now, you can tell by people sharing on that page that the experiences vary.
Right.
Like the origin of the voices, what the voices are telling them they are. You know what I'm saying? But we started sharing our experiences, and there were some striking similarities in the nature of our experience, right? Like the tendencies of the voices, what they were saying they were, their ability to deceive, their willingness to deceive, they just sounded like the same exact experience. And I was like, on a whim, I was like, hey, do me a favor and ask your voices something for me. Because she was like, she hears them all the time, just like me. Like, she hears them 24/7. She can ask them questions whenever she wants. And I was like, ask your voices if they've ever communicated with somebody named Shane Rogers. And she asked them, and right away they're like, yes, we have. I was like, okay, well, do me a favor and ask them why they don't communicate with me anymore. And they said, because he passed his tests. He loves a God of love, of hope, of peace.
Hmm.
And that's the reason that they gave her for why they don't communicate with me anymore. I was like, what a God shot, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. I think I got a little tingle.
Yeah, no, like, that's so, like, that's the most illogical thing, right? That it doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying?
That's like, I was still on the fence, like, okay, like, and this is the really trippy part that gave me chills. Before I asked her to ask them that, I was like, ask them what my drugs of choice were. And I've never posted it on Facebook. I've never once posted what my drugs of choice were.
Yeah.
What I've done. I'm not very open about that because it's embarrassing.
Right.
I don't want to, like, advertise that shit. And so I was like, ask them what my drugs of choice were. And she lists meth, heroin, and weed. Mm. Like, of all the drugs that exist, that's what she lists up.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what are the odds?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they are the most common.
That's true.
But if
you have a conversation with her, you should ask her what their names are, right?
Yeah, I should.
Maybe she's got a Cynthia, in there.
I don't know, maybe. She said, well, the voices told me that they work in groups.
Mm,
because,
so maybe they're separate, right?
Yeah, they work in groups. And it all fit, like, It didn't make sense that I would hear the same voices 24/7. I would hear voices 24/7, but they would
be different people. Kind of like a shift,
like,
right?
Like working shifts, huh. Exactly. Like that. And it was everything about it. Just made it feel so human in nature. Because we're dicks.
Well, humans are dicks.
Yeah, dude, we
fucking bomb people for fucking money, dude. We're assholes.
I know a lot of people are gonna, like, listen to this and be like, that's fucking wild, right? Like,
yeah.
I can't even, like, this guy is fucking absolutely insane. But, like, it sounds reasonable to me, right? Like, I've been to, like, levels of, like, paranoia where I, like, think stuff like that. You know what I mean? Even though, like, there's no physical evidence for anything like that happening, you know? And, like, the feelings behind the things are real. Like, whether or not, like, anything physical was actually happening, right? Like, my fear and my anxiety behind that shit is tangible, right? Like, it has a physical effect on me and, like, my actions. And so, that's fucking insane, dude.
I'm right.
So glad you're doing so much better.
You're right. It does make me sound completely off the wall or in completely detached. But for the listeners, I am completely sane, functional.
Yeah.
I have a job. I work with homeless people. I function. I have a girlfriend.
You probably help more people than they do, so...
Yeah,
fuck
them.
You know what I'm saying?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I know how it makes me sound. I'm not too keen to talk about it that often, except for from, like, coming from a place of wanting to help people who are still going through that.
Right. Yeah.
That's the only time I really share.
Like, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
Is, like, if somebody who listens to this podcast can be like, oh, I identify with that, and, like, now I know there's somewhere I can go for help, like, then you've done the right thing. Like, if it doesn't matter to somebody else, then it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? That's
and what was that Facebook group again?
It's called Intervoice.
Okay.
Intervoice.
Intervoice?
The International Hearing Voices Movement.
Hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah, if anybody does hear this and they are going through anything like that, there's a Facebook page where you can share your experience and find somebody who's going through something similar or...
Yeah.
There's schizophrenic people on there. There's people with just bipolar 1 who have episodes, manic episodes. But yeah, it's like, there's thousands and thousands of people that are going through it.
through that same experience. That was very, almost liberating when I found that out. I was
right.
Like, yeah.
I'm not the only one, you know?
Yeah. Like, as much as I hate most social media, there are some benefits.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like it connects us on a level we've never had before.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, probably before the group, you felt like an anomaly, you know? And then with the group, you realize that, you know, there's it's a shared experience. So you mentioned your mom earlier,
along with some adversity, right? Product of adversity.
Product of adversity. Yeah.
Do you want to go get into that a little bit?
I mean, so my mom was like a biker kind of chick when I was
younger.
When I was real young, she kind of like grew out of that, grew away from it. But we were homeless, pretty much, me, my brother, my sister. We, like, I've shared it on Facebook. Like, I painted a picture of a tent because we camped for like 3 months one time, me and my mom, because she fell on particularly hard times and we didn't have a place to go. And my older brother and sister their dad was always a part of their life. Like, they knew their dad. So when things got really rough with my mom, we would go and we would, I would be stuck staying with my mom, and they would go and live with their father.
Right.
So my mom went from having three kids as like that baggage to having one, and she became much more nomadic. Like, we moved around a lot. We stayed on people's couches. We camped. I slept in the same bed with my mom until I was 13. Just like sleeping wherever we could, you know?
Yeah.
I just grew up in a really, just under adverse circumstances. I'm thankful for it now because it, like, I work with homeless people for a living now. So
yeah.
It's coming from a place of empathy and compassion. And
right.
Like, I relate to a lot of the clients really well. And it's helped me in my later life, you know what I'm saying? I can help just gives people someone to relate to, you know, because the homeless demographic, the homeless population is so guilt and shame ridden. Like, they have no self-esteem at all. They're at the bottom of the societal totem pole, right? So they've had everything taken away from them. And their circumstances vary. You never know why someone was homeless, you know? COVID resulted in homelessness for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Drug and alcohol addiction is the most prevalent reason for homelessness. But, like, there, you know, that we have a kid named Joey who, like, he is a younger kid. He's, like, 21 or something like that. Clean cut. You would never, by meeting him, you would never be able to tell he's homeless. But he won't stop doing drugs, so his parents won't let him live with them. He has a house to go to. Like, if he were just to get sober, he could go home and stay with family, you know?
Well, I would have chose drugs over a bed.
Yeah, me too.
You know?
I did.
But I'm just saying the circumstances vary. So anyways, I'm really thankful for the way I grew up because it helps me now in life to where I can relate to people.
Yeah.
Right.
A little bit of adversity, I think, is good for everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I was homeless for a very short amount of time and, like, lived, like, transient where I, like, was on the streets in Phoenix and then, like, was living in, like, sleeping in abandoned buildings and stuff like that. But I never really, like, I still viewed myself as, like, separate, you know what I mean? Like, I never, because I knew that, like, I could probably, like, make a phone call and get a bus ticket, right? So I was, like, making a conscious decision to, like, live that way. You know what I mean? I knew that I could probably get my way out of it if I really try hard enough. But I met people on the street, and they've just been doing it for years. You know what I mean? Like decades, literal decades.
Yeah.
Like, what trips me out is, like, the amount of, like, people who are homeless and, like, their families don't know where they are, and they could be looking for them. You know what I mean? Like, I have a really good friend, and her cousin struggled with drug addiction and ended up being homeless, and they were looking for him, trying to figure out where he was. And then the next thing you know, he overdosed and died. And that's how they found out where he was. You know what I mean? And that's just fucking nuts, right? Like, you don't hear about it, but it's happening, right? Like, it's happening right fucking now, you know?
Better be Shane.
Yeah, man.
It wouldn't be the first time if it
went. Homelessness is no joke, and it's probably, like, I think in my mind, it's, like, one of the most, like, pressing issues that we should be, like, looking at, right, yeah, as a society.
So,
and
I think for, I mean, speaking for regular people, I'm not a regular person, okay? I'm a fucking drug addict. I think for, like, most people, though, like, they see, like, you know, a homeless drug addict, and they, you know, their immediate thought is, I'm fucking working my ass off all day, like, fuck that guy, he's just not doing anything. But I don't think a lot of people realize, like, the mentality of it, you know? Like, when I was in my active addiction, like, there was no saying no to drugs. Like, the drugs controlled me. I feel like people could take a more empathetic, or is sympathetic?
Empathetic. It could be both, right? So yeah. It could be. I think a better word would be compassionate, right?
Compassionate, like, view towards it. But that being said, and I don't want to get too into, like, I don't want to get into, like, the politics of it or anything, but, like, I don't think in a lot of, like, states in the U.S. that we're doing the right thing when it comes to homelessness.
I agree with you.
And I think it's, like, it's a hard issue to tackle, right? Because, like Shane said, is, like, everybody's, the reason why everybody's homeless is usually different, right?
Yeah.
And there's a litany of reasons, and resources are there, right? And people do come back from homelessness, you know?
Yeah.
But some of those resources don't work for everybody, right? Yeah. Because there's also, like, dual diagnosis, where people also have mental health issues, right? And stuff like that. Yeah. So,
well, and then you got the people who are just fine, who, like, and, like, so I work in a truck, right, dude? And, like, every time I get off the freeway, there's the same guy sitting there with a sign, right? And I'm always like, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? And he's fine, dude. He's, like, mentally there. He's not drunk or anything, but he's like, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? It's like, oh, sweating my balls off, you know? I'm like, how much money you make today? He's like, $90. And I'm like, shit, why the fuck do I got a real job, you know? Yeah. Like, you know? And, like, so he kind of, like, soured me towards that, you know? But yeah, but not everybody who's homeless is out there, like, taking advantage of compassionate people, you know? And, like, I think there are some homeless people who do take advantage of the compassion that people want to give.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think it's, so I don't necessarily know if it's, like, taking advantage, but I think some people just prefer not to have responsibilities, like, any at all, right? And I feel like that kind of, like, alludes to, like, the overreaching problem of, like, it's such a, there's no one solution, right?
No,
you know
not,
what I mean? Like, I literally, like, sat outside with, like, a cardboard sign and, like, made, like, $60, right, as, like, a young, like,
that's
white
a
kid.
Fat sack, bro.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's exactly what I did with that money, you know? But there's, like, so many other experiences that go along with that, right? It's, like, being so cold that I have kind of permanent nerve damage in my hand, right? Because from frostbite, you know what I mean? And, like, getting food out of the dumpster, right? Yeah. And so, like, even though, like, I was still making a choice, right? I had every available resource out there to, like, get help. I still chose not to because I preferred not to have any responsibility.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, working at the homeless shelter, you see that, like, the two main contributing factors are mental illness that has gone untreated and drug and alcohol addiction. Like, a large percentage of the homeless population in Flagstaff got stimulus payments.
Right.
Like, they received stimulus payments. And to anybody with any level of sense, right, like, $1,400 is enough to get get some clothes, to get a job interview.
Right. Get a cheap motel room for a little bit, take a shower, get a haircut.
Yeah, and we provide, like, they can get haircuts at the shelter and they can take showers at the shelter. Like, you can live, we have a couple clients who just, are working. They're working right now. They're saving money to get a place, but they're living at the shelter because they have nowhere else to go.
Right.
Right. But because, like you said, John, they don't want to shoulder any responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
they just took their stimulus and went and drank themselves into oblivion.
Right.
Got high with it. And that's really unfortunate. But I think you nailed it when you said there's no one solution.
Right.
Because the circumstances vary and people's attitudes vary. You know? Like, I have one client who is very employable. Like, he's very respectful, he's always working out, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I asked him one day, I'm like, hey, have you gotten on the housing list? Because we have a list of people, we have caseworkers, and there's funds out there to get people to where we pay their first and last month's rent. We pay a security deposit for them so they can get into cheap, affordable housing, well, affordable for Flagstaff.
Right.
Yeah, which, good luck finding.
Yeah, it takes a while. Yeah. But I ask him all the time, I'm like, hey, have you gotten on the list for housing? And he's just like, I'm comfortable where I am at the moment. And he just stays at the shelter.
Right? Yeah.
And he just doesn't want to shoulder the responsibility of having a job.
Right.
And being a normal, productive member of society, unfortunately. So I think as long as, like, there is civilization, there will be homeless people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just a necessary, not a necessary evil, but an inevitable one.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I got kicked out of a homeless shelter. And then the other one, I decided that I didn't want to follow their rules. So I just stopped going. You know what I mean? And it's like real simple rules. It's like show up at 6 and don't get high in the bathroom. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, I can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go sleep in this building that's half torn down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's like the most simple explanation, right?
Yeah.
It's like you get to make a choice on what you want to do and what you don't want to do, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people just make that choice that they don't want to do certain things.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
And some people are incapable of doing those certain things. So,
awesome. You guys asked me about the adversity thing. And this is something that I like to share because, I know it's such a widely spread problem. Growing up, and so I was a victim of sexual abuse growing up, like my whole life. My mom would like have sex with me in the room. She would have sex with random strangers. She was real lascivious. And she would, like, I got exposed to sex at a really early age, unfortunately. And it made me really sexually confused, you know, because I was like witnessing sex when I was like 6 and 7, 8 years old. And usually don't get like a sex talk until you're about to hit puberty, right? So, I was getting exposed to sex, and I became really sexually interested at a really young age, like an unhealthy young age. And it wasn't until I was about 13 years old when I had, like, a borderline sexual experience with my mother. And it fucked me up. Like, for the rest of my life, it fucked me up. I would shame myself for it. I would tell myself these horrible things about myself. And then once I started telling people about this shit, talking about it to my sponsor and to therapists and things like that, it wasn't until they were like, you know, Ben.
Yes. We know Ben.
You know Ben? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I called him one day and I was fucked up over it. And I just told him about it. And he's just like, dude, that's sexual abuse. He's like, that's not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this liberating sort of, like, wow, like, it wasn't my fault. I shouldn't have been put in situations like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that was more advert, that, like, level of upbringing or that circumstances of upbringing was more, I think, damaging than the homelessness itself, because it, like, confused me for the rest of my life. Like, it fucked me up for a long time. You know what I'm saying? I was real just confused sexually until I started talking about it and working through that specific bit of trauma.
Did that make it... I'm assuming that made it hard to be, like really intimate with someone you found attractive or cared about, right?
Definitely. Okay. Definitely. And it made it to where I had like a distorted view of women in general. You know,
because
my mom, the main like female role model that I had growing up was, and I love my mom to death. She passed away a couple years ago, but like I love her to death, but she was very promiscuous growing up. Like, she had no regard for like the beauty that sex is. Like, she just had it all the time, right? So I had this idea of women that they were all like that. So it fucked with my levels of trust, like when I was getting in my first early relationships, you know? Yeah. Like I was just like, every girl is promiscuous, right? Like no girl is capable of a committed single partner relationship.
Yeah.
I just didn't trust I didn't trust women as far as I could throw them, like, at all. And it wasn't until I started working out that trauma and working through it and talking about it that I started to realize, like, dang, not everybody's like that. Like,
right.
Yeah.
You know. I had a situation when I was homeless, and I was flying a sign, and this guy was like, "Hey, you want to come do some yard work for some money, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I want to come do some yard work for some fucking money, right?" Well, I get to his house, and I like move some shit around. He brings me in, he's inside. He's like, "Oh, you want some of these oxys, right?" And I'm like, "Fuck yeah, I want some oxys." And then he starts feeling me up, right? And I'm like, "Bro, I gotta get the fuck out of here right now." Yeah. But that situation right there, you know what I mean, was enough to make me like be afraid to be alone with like old white men, right? And I've actually never shared this in public before. Like, this is the first time.
Did you get some oxys?
No, I did not.
What the fuck,
dude? Because he was like, what'd he say? He was like, something like, he was like alluding to doing like way more than just like trying to like rub up on my shoulder or like touch my knee, you know what I mean?
Such a prude, dude.
I know, I can't help it, dude. You gotta buy me dinner, you know what I'm saying?
Sexuality is a river, okay? As it flows.
But I mean, like, it was like, where do I draw the line at that point? It was like, yes, I want like money, this guy, like, but the other thing is like, I was like trapped because I got in his car, right? And I was in Grand Junction and he like drove way out there, right? And I had like no fucking way to get back, you know what I mean? So I had like kind of like not like turn him down like so hard to where I'm gonna get fucking stranded or possibly murdered. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's fucking terrifying. Yeah. But I've talked with like a few counselors after this since I've gotten sober, and like I remember like doing some community service for this like pastor, right? Like a guy that I remember just like, he touched me and I just got so fucking like withdrawn and like grossed out just by that physical contact. Yeah. And so like I can relate to that aspect of like judging a whole like demographic of people from that just one, from the terrible experience that you had. So
It's not all old white men, okay?
Most.
Just kidding. Rude. You're gonna be an old white man one day.
Oh, maybe.
Shit. I had a question, and then John started talking about oxys and somebody groping you. Dude, that's like a double bonus, bro.
Yeah.
I'm a sick pup. Dude. I'm sorry.
No, thank you, Shane. Like, actually, I really want to thank you because I remember hearing you share that experience, right? Like, I think for like the first time in a meeting or something. Or I think I heard you speak, right? At Saturday's meeting. And I never share that experience in like a large group of people. Yeah. I've never shared it as part of like my like story, right? Well, it's not something I talk about.
It's going on the internet now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so I might as well just get it over with, right? But I feel like, but your courage, right? I've always like thought about it. I was like, man, I should share that. And so like, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's important. I kind of avoided talking about my childhood and my experience for a long time because, like, nobody wants to hear a sob story, right? Like, people have their own issues, their own things they're going through. But then I realized, like, but what about those people who are still in their sob story?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Who are still experiencing the shit that you went through. You know, like, they have a voice, too, and they deserve to felt heard and related to, you know? So that's why it's so important to talk about those things, is because you never know, like, who needs to hear that, and just for the sake of not feeling alone, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Just hearing that and be like, damn, I've been through that, or I'm currently going through that, and somebody made it through that, and they're doing well now.
Right.
That's like, it's important.
Well, and it's also, it's not fair to you to keep that stuff in there, you know?
I remember for me, like, one of the hardest things was, like, trying, because, like, we all know I'm in a program, and part of the program is, like, looking for your part in it, right? And, like, really like trying to like actually do the work and like trying to figure out if I had a part in this, right? Yeah. And like the truth is I don't, right? And like how do I like reconcile that, right? Because the whole idea is like holding yourself accountable, you know? Yeah. And like sure, I was in that like active drug addiction, but my sponsor at the time was like, no, dude, like even if like you still don't deserve to get treated that way, right? Yeah. Like and taken advantage of that way just because right. you're using. And he was like, and you actually alluded to this earlier, it's like I developed pity for this person, right? Yeah. It's like I use drugs to cope with my pain, and this person hurts people like this to cope with theirs, right? And like, I'm so glad I just did drugs, right? Yeah. Instead of resorting to that, right?
That's a good point. Like, you don't. Sometimes you don't have a part necessarily in the trauma itself, but you have a space reserved for you to take part in the resolution, right? Like, you can take part in the lessons that you learn from it, and. I resented the hell out of my mom all through my adolescent years. Through my formative years in high school and stuff like that, I would slander her. I would, like paint her to be this most horrible person, right? But the truth is, when my mom's sober, she's an angel. Like, she's the greatest person I can think of when she's sober, right? And it wasn't until I started dealing with my own addiction that I was able to view her through a lens of compassion and be like, she was sick. Right. She was suffering really badly, right? And like I ended up having a better relationship with her towards the end of her life when she passed away of a meth overdose. A lot of people don't think you can die from a meth overdose.
It's really hard to die. It's really hard to die from
a meth overdose. She probably had some like underlying health conditions, right? You know?
Like maybe some heart palpitations, something like that.
But on an inner toxicology report, the only thing that came back was meth toxicity for her cause of death. I'm very thankful for the fact that later in my life, I was able to have more of a like constructive, positive relationship with her because I started to understand her a little bit. Like, man, she's just suffering. Like, she's just going through it. Like, that's all. She just can't get sober. And until someone's ready, like, all the... She can take them to as many meetings as you want to or try and shove God down their throat, and until they hit that moment of clarity where they're like, man, I need to change my life, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, there's a thousand detoxes, you know, but until they're ready, you can't help.
Yeah. My sponsor, this is one point, like, if I was going to make any specific point during this podcast, I was going to say that one thing that is always, that I carry with me and that I use in my day-to-day life is the explanation of my first step, right? When Justin explained the first step to me, he said, as addicts and alcoholics, we're unhappy, right? We start off unhappy, restless, irritable, and discontent is what the book says, I believe. And we get a sense of ease and comfort from drugs and alcohol, right? So we turn to that. The problem is that often turns into a spree. It could be a day, multiple days, multiple months, multiple years, but you go on a spree where you can't stop, right? And you're going to use or drink until you arrive at a moment of clarity. And sometimes it manifests in the form of a DUI, a stint in jail, the loss of a relationship or a house or a car, right? You start losing enough to where you're like, you have this moment of clarity. You're like, man, I got to get sober.
Yeah.
Right? And oftentimes you are able to get sober, but there's brevity there, right? Like you go to rehab or do whatever you need to do to get sober, cold turkey, whatever, and you can get sober for a small amount of time, but it's often not long before you arrive at that unhappy, restless, irritable, discontentedness again, and then you repeat that cycle.
Yeah.
Right?
Because that's all you know.
That's all you know. You return to that sense of ease and comfort to treat that discontentedness. And like Justin was explaining to me, he's like, but so something needs to happen in between that moment of clarity of getting sober and your next period of discontentedness, right? And for people in the program, that is a spiritual experience,
right?
Like a spiritual connection, like a relationship with God is what interferes and breaks that cycle. Otherwise, it's going to repeat forever. Like,
yeah.
And so that is like me in a nutshell, right? Like, and I think that's, when Justin broke that down for me, I'm like, damn, I'm fucked.
Well, you're not, obviously.
Yeah, no.
You know?
On your own.
Yeah,
you're fucked.
On my own, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I tell all my sponsees, too, is like, my step one is just like, I'm fucked by myself, right? I can't do this alone. And if you can do that, like, then you're well on your way, right? To getting better. So,
what else we got?
Well, we're right at about that hour mark.
Okay.
But I do want to talk. I mean, are you in a rush?
No. I got no
rush. Okay. All right. Cool. I just sweet. Yeah. Sweet, we can make it go longer. Yeah. Fuck John. He's the one who wants a fucking time limit anyways. Just
kidding. It's just a guy,
bro. I love you.
It's just
I
a guy.
I love you, okay? All
right.
We have marital arguments.
I was looking at the previous interviews you guys did, and they seem to range from like an hour to an hour and 30 minutes.
It's like in between there.
Seems to be the standard.
There was one that was like an hour and 40, and I thought it was too long, and I told Richie that, and I was like, so like we don't have to have a set time frame, you know what I mean? But like, we should try it. Most podcasts out there, except the Joe Rogan Experience, average from like 40 minutes to like an hour and a half. So we should like try to keep it
in. Joe Rogan's not even my main podcast, bro.
Not just that.
You could have fooled me, dog. Lex Friedman, bro.
You have to think about capturing the attention of an audience for that long. I think that's one of the reasons that like things like an AA meeting or a church sermon.
Exactly.
Like, things like that tend to like not last longer than an hour because getting someone to sit still for longer than an hour is often difficult.
Yeah, so,
people binge watch whole fucking series on Netflix.
It's got their attention. My favorite comedian, John Mulaney, says this about the Catholic Church. Their new slogan should be, it's only an hour, right? Like, it's just an hour of your life, right? And I feel like that's the sweet spot. But Richie wants to talk about something, so.
So, I hear you're something of an artist.
Amazing, really.
Thanks. I think the first time I ever, like, felt a real emotion from like, a painting or anything was the one where it's you and it has the figures and you're screaming, you know?
The voices.
That was like the first painting I ever looked at and like I had like an emotional reaction to.
Yeah.
Nice. So I just want to say like to be able to inspire that emotion in me, like good job, dude. Yeah. You know? It's fucking beautiful.
Oh, that one where you and your mom are camping too. Like that one, that whole post that you just made recently, like almost made me cry. Like I was like really on the verge of that.
Past that you're an artist, was that part of your escape? Did you like just paint your whole life? Like what was
It's weird, dude. I didn't get involved in painting until I got out of prison. So until I was like 24 is when I started painting.
Okay.
I could always kind of draw and doodle.
Right. You know?
Like draw what I looked at. But I didn't pick up the paints until about almost 7 years ago is when I started painting. But when I started painting, I was doing a lot of drugs and I could paint for like 8 or 9 hours at a time without stopping. So I picked it up really fast.
I had a lot of time to dedicate.
Do a little bit of meth, and you can sit still for a long time. And so I started painting just all day, every day. Like, I was just a drug addict painting. And
okay.
I just developed the skill really fast. But I'd say books were more of an escape growing up.
Okay.
Like, I got into, I think the first series of books I ever read was, of course, Harry Potter.
Right.
And that's, like, my go-to read because of how effectively she creates a universe, right?
Yeah.
She creates this whole other world.
Within our world, too.
Within our world, yeah, exactly. So, it serves as a very effective escape.
Right.
From whatever you're going through. Like, just read a book. I encourage books that aren't too thought-provoking, something that, like, just imagination-provoking.
Right.
Like, just something that really takes you away from what you're currently experiencing. Mm-hmm. But books were, like, my major release growing up.
Did you know some people don't, like, see books act out in their mind's eye? They just see words?
That's fucking weird.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
That's weird. That sucks.
Yeah, isn't that the worst, dude?
When I'm making a book, sucks. I don't even see the words, dude. It's like a movie.
Yeah, it's a movie playing in my head, right? And but some people don't do that, right? Like, yeah. I was like, I can't remember what I read online, but it's like some people don't have that mind's eye image, like, yeah. when they read books. And that sucks for them, right?
Yeah, that's sad.
Right?
I hate when I almost have a love-hate relationship with movies that are based off books, because once you see the movie...
right, it changes your perception.
You read the book, you're seeing those characters from the movies do all this shit that's in the books. Like, yeah. And don't judge, I'm rereading Twilight right now, okay?
Oh, I'm a judge here.
Team Edward
Fly. Listen,
yeah.
Hey, in the movies, Jacob's a hotter guy, okay? And I'm just gonna say that.
That's what my girlfriend says.
Listen, dude, he's buff. He's got that nice skin color.
Mallory's like, Jacob's way hotter than that. Dude,
that is an attractive young man right there.
I'm also a fan of the Twilight books. So.
But now that I have seen the movies, like, I'm reading the books and I'm just watching these characters in my head.
Chris Pattinson? Is that his name?
Robert
Pattinson? You're just watching Robert Pattinson play it out, dude.
Yeah. Fucking Cedric Diggory, dude.
Yeah.
He's a vampire now.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to be the new Batman.
He is the new Batman.
And I'm really stoked for that. Are you still painting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I just recently picked up paints again. I did a painting for my girlfriend's little sister's birthday. She painted this little forest scene. I'm going to get back into it. We're staying at the Oxford House for a long time, and space is limited there.
Gotcha.
You have a roommate that is in the room with you.
And what makes it hard to focus?
And when I paint, I'm like a mad scientist. Like, my shit is everywhere. You know, I got paint over here, over there. I have a rag. I have brushes everywhere. Like, right. I spread my shit out. And, it just didn't... The living situation at the Oxford House didn't warrant that. So now that I'm living back with Billy and in my own room, I can spread out on the floor. And so I'll be painting a lot more.
Okay. I'm going to let you know, if there's ever like a point in the future where you don't have space, let me know. You can come over to my house and sit in the, like, paint in the garage or whatever, dude. You paint wherever the fuck you want, dude. Definitely. I really want to like support that. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And not many people like have the ability to like capture emotions like that. Like, I look at the fucking Mona Lisa all day. I don't give two fucks. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a bitch staring at me, dude. You know?
Yeah, man. And I really hope, I know we were talking about this before we started recording, but I really hope you, if you ever need any help, like, getting your shit online, you know what I mean? Like, let me or let him know.
Yeah.
Or she doesn't know shit about hashtags, but I do, so.
Well, and so, I guess I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
It's in the works. I'm going to probably make a website for the podcast, just because, like, if somebody goes into Google and types in, like, help with drugs or whatever, I want like,
you want it,
the
you
podcast want... to be able to come up in the algorithm.
Right.
And, like, that could lead to, like, a lot of other things, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, selling t-shirts or paintings, you know?
Right.
And then it'll hopefully help provide like a broader audience base.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but you came on and helped us, right? So we'd like to be able to try to help you if we can, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, we love symbiosis, man. Help each other out.
Yeah.
For sure. We live off each other. I have an Instagram for my art. It's Starving Artist. All lowercase underscore 333.
Am I following you?
Maybe.
Okay.
It has all my art up until today on it, and you can see the progression from when I first started painting. Like, it, you can see me learning to paint on this Instagram.
That's cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
That's like, cool.
It has my earliest paintings when I was just looking at things and painting them.
Yeah.
We need to get you a following so you can fucking auction them off as NFTs. You know what I'm saying? Like.
Dude.
I don't understand what an NFT is.
Nobody does, dude. Art, but it gets the people going. You know what I'm saying?
Art is a fucked up market, man. Like, I go to... Like, if you go to some of those galleries in Sedona, some of those artists that are selling paintings for, like, 10... Art is all in the name.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you see people selling paintings for, like, $10,000, $15,000 a painting, where it's just, right. like, literally
ink blots, like splatters. Yeah, well, yeah,
they're just like. It's the episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia does it the best, right? It's like it's all art is all worth what the other person will pay for it, right? Yeah. Like you don't get to decide. Like you can try to decide how much your art is worth, but if you like price it ridiculously, it only sells if somebody's willing to buy it, right? And so it's only worth as much as people are willing to pay for. So.
Yeah.
How many paintings do you think they're selling in those studios down there?
Probably a lot, actually. Yeah, yeah, because it's in that gallery, right? And that gallery space is what moves it, right?
Yeah,
okay. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What
But if you set up if they bring the art walk back, right? And like you could probably, I know people make a killing during the art walk, so.
Yeah, I was doing live paintings. I do live.
I remember that on First Fridays, right?
On First Friday at Night of Light, where I just paint a picture in front of the crowd and have my most recent work out there. But I've always been on drugs, man, so I've never been able to, like, accumulate enough capital to, like, get a bunch of prints made.
Right.
Get a bunch of prints made so I could sell my most popular pieces of art. On, like, to generate some kind of income from it.
Well, right. That's one of the reasons why when Lorena said you were asking, I was like, fucking buy one. You know what I'm saying? Because I want to help support you in that, dude.
Well, and it's a fucking awesome painting.
It's fucking beautiful. Badass.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. Just me personally, I fucking love space and shit.
Yeah.
When you started talking about aliens, I was like, sweet, dude.
I believe that shit, dude.
Me too. Like,
there has to be something.
You're completely fooling yourself if you don't believe in. If you think humans are the end all, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, in a universe full of infinite possibilities, there's got to be something else out there.
Because of math.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Math. Statistics say there are aliens out.
Math.
That's
like,
it.
Dude, my new favorite shit to do is argue with flat earthers on TikTok. I love like saying shit to them. My comments get deleted all the time because I'll like present a piece of evidence like this is like math is why the earth is round. Like, well, it's never
a pendulum. Dude, explain that.
Dude, it's never like you'll never see someone who is educated on that subject matter come out and say the earth is flat.
That's not entirely true. There are incredibly stupid, educated people in this world.
Amen.
But it's rarely like
that they'll argue in the group.
I've never seen a mathematician come out and say that the earth is flat. Okay? I've never seen somebody who like studies math come out and say that the earth is flat. Right? Like, they understand, like, there's this thing called the triangle, to where if you were to walk in a straight line for 10 kilometers, right, or drive in a straight line for 10 kilometers, do a 90-degree angle, make a 90-degree angle, a 90-degree turn, drive for 10 more kilometers, and then another 90-degree turn, and drive for 10 more kilometers, you would arrive at exactly where you started from. On a flat earth, that would be impossible. It would just be three sides of a square. But because the earth is round, if you do that three times, if you walk straight for 90 degrees, you arrive at exactly where you started. And that's like the point that I always make on TikTok. I'm like, explain that.
And they just delete it.
Mathematically,
yeah.
That's impossible.
Yeah,
so because of math, like the fucking earth is round.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to tag the Flat Earth Society in this post.
Hell yeah.
Because there's like a whole cult following.
Oh, dude, there is.
I love people who like truly believe that shit. And then my favorite thing is like, it's always some like 24-year-old woke kid who's telling
the
you
best.
This. And then they always like to leave at the end of the post to like, do your research. It's like, where did you get your research on Google?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You Googled a bunch of conspiracy theories that arrived at the conclusion that the earth is fucking flat.
I can Google Marvel. That doesn't mean the Marvel Universe is real.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to go into... What's your process like when you paint? Do you like,
I like to paint from a real place, man. I like to like you'll see a lot of my paintings are the one of me and my mom when we camped when I was a kid. There's one called Walks with Mom where it was just like me and my mom walked everywhere when I was a kid. She didn't have a car, so we would walk across town, and those are some of the most memorable conversations that I had with her because I would just. One thing about my mom is she had, like, this level of patience. I would ask her everything, and she would just answer these questions
with the most sincerity, and like I was, and she would talk to me like I was just like I was her age. You know what I'm saying? She would talk to me like she was talking to a person. She wouldn't like talk to me like I was dumb for asking the question or anything. So it really stuck with me, like the level of patience that she had and the level of love that she showed me during those walks. So that's probably my favorite painting that I've done. It's just a picture of me and my mom walking through Shiloh, Arizona. So I try and paint from a real place. I do a lot of stuff of Flagstaff, the peaks. You know, I grew up here. I grew up here, and it, you know, it means a lot to me, and plus it sells. I'm not gonna lie. I don't sell the stuff that's like more subjective, that means stuff to me, like the voices painting, the stuff with my mom in it. Like, I don't really sell any of that. Those are sentimental in value.
Right.
But the stuff that's most popular is the shit of Flagstaff. I did one of the Monty V that everybody was like, dude, that's what I want, you know?
Yeah.
I had one guy buy like all three of my big Flagstaff paintings. And then Adam Marinelli and his wife bought one Peaks painting. The Peaks stuff sells quick, dude.
Yeah, everybody wants.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
That's like Flagstaff's shit, you know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sweet, dude. Thank you for coming and doing this.
Yeah, man, thank you.
I'm grateful that you were willing to expose yourself the way you did. I think without people like you or me or John out there, like, willing to just fucking, you know, talk about the shit we've been through, a lot of people wouldn't be as brave.
I'm honored. When you asked me, I was like, damn, you're so really privileged, and like, you know, I really support what you guys do. I think it's a brilliant angle. We have stories, man.
That's yeah. One thing about
people who are
sick people do sick things.
It's healthy and it's constructive to talk about this kind of shit. So I'm really grateful and thankful that you guys had me on here today.
Hell yeah. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I love you, man.
Yeah, I love you too, guys.
Yeah, I love you. All right.
All right.
Closing this bitch down. I don't know why I said that. I'm probably going to cut it out.
Yeah, you for sure will.